Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Windows Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is Windows Weekly with Paul Thurrott, episode 39 for October 26th, 2007. Ed Bott. It's time for Windows Weekly, ladies and gentlemen. Paul Thurrott is here from Dedham. And in the dead of night. No, it's not, actually. It's in the broad daylight.
It's even earlier than usual.
Squinting
in the sun.
And to make up for last week's episode, in which there was very little Windows news, Now, I'm sure you got some emails saying, what are you talking about Apple for the whole time? Did you get anybody say, well, here was a huge Windows story you didn't cover?
No. Actually, although I did get one guy who said, actually, I would like to hear about Office Communication Server. Thank you very much.
Okay, but I don't think it'll be on this podcast.
Okay. Well, yeah, as I had in that discussion with that particular person, I just said, look, you know, there's absolutely room out there for an IT-focused.
I think there are probably plenty already.
Podcast. Yeah, I'm not the guy for that.
No. Somebody asked me, we had a Mac Break Weekly in which we didn't talk about much Mac stuff, and the guy said, well, you could have talked about OS X. Leopard server and its new iCal server. And
hey, listen, Apple had a Macworld this year. They didn't talk about the Mac ad at all.
Well, what I told him is, I know that should be covered, and I'm sure somebody's going to is doing a great job of it. I've never done enterprise computing, nothing on TWiT really covers enterprise computing because it's just not that interesting.
You know, I blogged about this week. It's something I occasionally like to remind people of, because there are times when whatever happens to be going, I can't invent news, or I can't invent topics necessarily. I guess I could invent some topics, but things just go a certain way. So Apple releases a bunch of iPods one week.
That's going to be the story.
I have to write some reviews of iPods that week, and then I'll have someone inevitably who will write me and say, well, I go to your site to read about Windows Vista. How come you're writing about iPods?
Sometimes, and the reason is nothing to say.
Well, yeah. No, the reason is actually really simple. I mean, most people who use iPods are Windows users, and they're really popular, so I think it's relevant, to the audience.
Right.
And I honestly believe that in these sort of technology cliques, if you look at people who are interested in Linux or Palm OS or Apple or Microsoft or whatever, I think the blinders go up sometimes, and you don't really see the world around you. And don't understand that these things actually do affect you. Leopard in particular is obviously the most viable competition that Microsoft has in the client OS space. I think it's important. I think it's something Windows users should at least be aware of. And by the way, all around you right now, people are actually switching from Windows to the Mac. Now, is this something you need to consider? Does Leopard make that a better picture? I think this is a very relevant topic. And this Friday I'll publish my review of Leopard, and I'll explain my thoughts along those lines. But just because Apple does makes it, or Palm or Sun Microsystems or whoever you care to mention, I think these things are all related, and I think they're relevant.
We cover technology. I mean, it's silly to be kind of so devoted to one platform that you don't pay any attention to the other. And you're right. The most recent Apple results showed a huge growth in Apple.
Yes.
Switchers, surprisingly.
Right. 50% of all Mac purchases now are coming from people who are new to the platform.
Wow.
They're coming from Windows. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's what you need to be doing. I don't find that to be the case, but I think it's worth studying. And I think that just from a competitive standpoint, it's interesting to look at something and say, well, here's where they're better, here's where they're worse. Is it really possible or even desirable for you to make this change, or whatever? So I just think this is relevant, that's all. But anyway, the email that I got about this topic was from people who sort of pointed at you and said, well, clearly this is coming from Leo. Leo's the big Mac guy. And
yeah, I talked Paul into it.
Leo has a strange hold over my
it's called the reality distortion.
Yeah. No.
I don't tell Paul undercover, believe me. I'm not that crazy.
I'm sort of a puppet. you know, yeah. with the strings. No, that came from me. I mean, that was my idea.
I tried to talk them out of it, folks.
Do all, you know, it wasn't, let's do all Apple stuff. It was, hey, look, this is what's going on this week. It right. just so happens, you know, it's Apple. That's the way it goes. But, you know, just as on the super site, when Microsoft comes up with some, you know, Vista Service Pack 1 information, or the Zune guys, you know, suddenly spring to life after hibernating for 9 months, or, you know, Windows Home Server gets released. You know, I spring back to life in that sense as well, and head over to greener pastures. I mean, I'm going to go wherever the story is. So, I think it just worked out last week that it was all Apple. So, you know, we knew it was going to tweak a few people the wrong way, but that wasn't the intent. The intent was just to do what we always do.
It's funny because I expected to get more, and I didn't get much at all.
Yeah.
I thought,
well, maybe they
all wrote to you.
They're getting used to it. I hope.
Well, you'll like this week because there's no Apple talk this week at all. This is actually all
aside
about
from that little 10-minute diatribe. Yeah.
Except for that. Now we're done. We're going to talk with Ed Bott, who is an old friend of mine. He's former editor at PC World and just a great guy. A Windows fanatic, dyed in the wool. I mean, he's always been a Windows guy. And actually wrote a very thoughtful and long piece on his blog at ZDNet about Peter Gutman. I have to a little mea culpa here because we interviewed Peter Gutman in January, maybe. Anyway, early on when Vista had just first come out or was about to come out. I think it was before it came out. Steve Gibson and I interviewed Peter Gutman. And then, by the way,
it was the end of last year, if
yeah,
I remember.
Yeah, I think it was before I'd had any experience with Vista. Mm-hmm. And he talked about and spread a lot of frankly terror about the copy mm-hmm. protection scheme in Vista, and even I have been thinking now. Here we are a year later. Boy, nothing happened. Where's all that bad stuff? Well, Ed probably has been feeling the same way because he wrote a very long, very detailed, and I think very accurate piece on what Gutman got wrong, and so we thought we'd have him on the show.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's that series of articles was what got me talking to Ed, because I had referenced it on my blog, and we, you know, exchanged a few emails, and I just think what he's done there is incredible and important reading, and you know, a really interesting investigation into something that, you know, on the surface looks like it has teeth, but the more you actually get into it, you realize, you know, there's not much there.
Well, let's get Ed on the phone.
Alrighty.
So an old friend is on the line, and a guy who's been around this business for an awful long time. He must be in his 80s, I think, by now. Ed Bott, former editor at PC World, has written many, many books, including Windows Vista Inside and Out. Hello, Ed. It's good to talk to you again.
Leo, great to talk to you.
You're not that old.
After all these years.
Ed used to be a regular, Paul, on the show I did with Dvorak, the radio show I did with Dvorak.
But now, Dvorak is old.
Now that's old.
That's not that old.
Actually, we had Jerry Pournelle on Twit last week. And,
oh, God.
Now that's old. He's the guy who got Dvorak started. So there, that gives you some idea.
Right. He gets everybody started if you think about it.
You know, Leo, you and I were doing those shows together back before the internet existed.
That's right.
As we know it today.
No, that's right.
That's what was really weird. I mean, we were sitting there in that studio, typically looking stuff up on CompuServe.
Yeah, I don't know how we, you know, nowadays, I'm still doing the radio show. And frankly, I call it Google assisted memory. If it weren't for Google, I don't think I'd be able to do the radio show. And I don't know how I did it back then. I guess I was
actually
younger.
That's something Ed would probably appreciate because you'll remember, of course, you know, a decade ago, Microsoft's beta support forums were always on CompuServe.
Right.
And that when they moved it off of CompuServe, they sort of allowed the wider world, you know, to sort of take part in that. And of course, I think the quality, you know, kind of went downhill. But the nice thing about paying for CompuServe was that there was mostly wheat and not a lot of chaff. Yeah,
no, it's all chaff. But yeah. I have to say, by putting the knowledge base online, Microsoft did something that no other company's really done it as well. I mean, that really. That changed my life doing the radio show because I could go to a knowledge base and I could even say, oh, article 619432 on the air, and people could find it and really get the story. So I'm glad of that. I know that the forums aren't as useful, but I'm glad of that anyway. But enough of this trip down memory lane. By the way, that we were still talking about DOS 6.22 and Windows 3.0, I think, Ed, when you were on.
I'm afraid we were actually. I mean, we weren't even talking about Chicago betas at that point.
No, no.
This is making me feel old. I need to go take some Geritol. I'll be right back.
Now we're up to Vista. First of all, you know, Paul and I, of course, spent the last year talking about Vista. How do you like Vista, Ed?
I really like it. You know, and what's funny is that in the past month or so, I've gotten emails from at least half a dozen people who start out apologizing, saying, well, you and I must be the only people around who like Vista. You know, I was looking at some stuff yesterday and did a few little minor tweaks here and was marveling at how smooth and efficient my workspace setup is. What can I say? Yeah. I like it.
No, that's been my experience as well. I mean, I think we've gotten to the point now where all you hear is the bad news online. And
yeah, it's sure. If you were reading the news articles, you'd say, boy, everybody hates Vista.
Yeah, it sounds like an awful disaster. You know, it doesn't jibe with what I see every day.
Well, there's a conventional wisdom thing that's out there now where anyone can safely say Vista sucks.
Right,
you
know, sure.
You write that. Nobody's going to argue with you. Nobody's going to question it and all. If you say anything positive, like Walt Mossberg's column last week, where he was talking about his recommendations for how to buy a PC, the column that he does every year, and he mentioned some of the problematic issues that he's had with Vista. But when he got to the end of the column, he said, you know, but of course Vista is actually pretty solid, and most of the issues with it are going to be worked out in the next year or so. And if you get it now, you'll be happy with it in the long term. Nobody read that part,
right?
They all just saw the part where he talked about all the problems with Vista that he's had in the last 8 months or so. Go figure.
You don't think that Microsoft suffers a little bit, though, from having to maintain compatibility with older operating systems, older software, and older hardware?
Absolutely. That's probably the biggest problem. Look, if you could take Vista and reduce it to, say, six machine types.
Right.
That you put it on, all of which were known machine types. They were basically not expandable except through USB ports, and they didn't run any but the most perfectly written older software. Then you'd have a Mac.
That sounds an awful a lot like a Mac.
Yeah. That's a hard thing to do. Microsoft's success is what makes it hard for them to make a perfect operating system.
Right. Right. And so what you've got is this sort of continuum that goes from, you know, very limited choice, but high performance and high reliability to unlimited choice and the potential and maybe even the certainty of compatibility and reliability problems.
Right.
And so most people who actually, you know, think it through and make smart buying decisions sort of land somewhere in the middle where, you know, you're very careful about what you buy, very careful about what you download, and careful about what you install. And people who exercise that kind of care get sort of the best of both worlds. You get a fairly high degree of choices that you have, and you steer clear of most of the minefields, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is the I must have told you the story. I was debating somebody a long time ago about Apple versus Microsoft. And I said, Microsoft has the best engineers in the world. There's no doubt about it, because Windows boots up and works every single day on a billion computers.
If they had advantage of designing for that limited space, imagine what they could do.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So the reason you're on, and it really is about time we got you on. We, on Security Now, we had Peter Gutman on many moons ago, probably 6 months ago, when maybe even a year now, when he first wrote his paper, which it was slamming Vista primarily for the DRM in it. Recently was it on your blog, Ed?
It was at ZDNet.
It was at the ZDNet blog, which is blogs.zdnet.com/bot. You kind of took apart Gutman's screed and really, I think, demolished it. Everything you read about Vista DRM is wrong.
Yeah, I broke it up into three parts, and I mean, it's literally something that I've been working on for, it was more than 8 months that I was working on this piece. I wanted to write it in January. I wanted to write it in February and March, and I just didn't have enough, I didn't have enough information. I knew what the real story was, but I didn't, it's taken me this long to really, you know, get it together. And part of the problem also was that I think the paper that Peter wrote, I think he's well-intentioned. I think he really believes that he's doing a service, and I think he believes what he wrote. And the trouble is that he was so passionate determined to make what is ultimately a political argument that he sort of lowered the bar for the rules of evidence down to, about a millimeter off the ground.
Yeah.
And so as a result, many of the claims in there don't even stand up to even the slightest scrutiny.
You know, Peter has kept this up to date and is now, as you point out in your article, about 26,000 words. And yet, at the same time, I don't know if he's really kept it up to date in the sense that he's looked at. Well, I have to say, you know, when we first interviewed him, and I guess it was in January.
Right.
We hadn't really played with Vista yet. And so he scared a lot of people about how it would perform, especially. Oh, yeah,
you understand what this is, though, right? I mean, a lot of times people have a tendency to look at something like this and say, it looks pseudoscientific. It's certainly long. Clearly, this guy has spent a lot of time researching this. Otherwise, he could not have generated this amount of work.
Well, a certain amount of it came out of
as much analysis as people do a lot of the time.
Yeah, a certain amount of it, though, came out of trying to kind of read the tea leaves in Microsoft's own writings about Vista. And now that we've had Vista for a while, it's pretty clear that it does, in fact, work. It doesn't slow down. Video cards do work. Even premium content seems to work okay. So the proof's in the pudding.
Right.
I mean, and he, I don't know if he's really gone back and said, all right, well, now that we've had it for a year, let's look at this all over again.
Well, you can walk everything back and go to his original paper and say, how did this get so far off the rails? And there's two primary sources for this. I looked really, really carefully at this stuff. Number one is a series of papers that were published, that were delivered publicly, and then the transcripts and PowerPoint slides were published from the Windows Hardware Engineering Conference in 2005,
okay,
where much of this architecture was first publicly described by some of the technical folks at Microsoft, Dave Marsh in particular, and also by some partners of Microsoft, in particular ATI. So they talked about some of the early architectural issues, and they really laid some of these things out in the, you know, in the broadest possible terms. But this was, Paul, you might remember, I think this might have been right around the time of beta one of what ultimately, you know, what was after the Great Longhorn reset. It was right before beta one was released.
I want to say beta one was July 2005.
Yeah,
or late June.
Yeah, I think you're right. In May of 2005 was WinHack, and they specifically were talking about this stuff before releasing the first beta, because they didn't want everybody sitting out in the audience comparing notes against the beta that they were running there. So they always do this stuff right before the beta. So that's one source of this stuff. The second source for a lot of the commentary, now I'm not going to use adjectives or adverbs to describe it there, just the commentary that went on there, was based on people's early experiences with the beta software in late 2006 and with very early drivers for some of the devices that were out there. And so as a result, you had people talking about their experience with sound cards and having problem, you know, with the performance issues with getting their Creative sound card to work with Windows Media Player. And it doesn't work. It stutters. It gives me glitches in performance. Therefore, this must be related to DRM. Similarly, they would try to play some high-definition file that they downloaded from the internet, or try to play an HD DVD and it wouldn't work. This must be related to DRM. Because look how complicated this stuff is from these papers that we talked about back in 2005. Well, two separate issues, right? One was, you know, very early in the ecosystem's development, you know, in late 2006, a lot of this stuff just wasn't fully baked. And well, it is now.
That was why the consumer launch was pushed back, right? You know, so that they had time to deliver that stuff.
Right. And even in that case, a lot of the, you know, I mean, I think ATI is now up to the 7.10 Catalyst release. NVIDIA has basically been on a driver a month for the past 6 months. And I don't mean that to be a criticism at all. This is really complicated stuff. And I think it was right around June that both companies finally sort of crossed a threshold where they were fixing more stuff than they were breaking. And the most recent driver releases from both companies have been pretty awesome, actually. You know, and the bugs are starting to get into the esoteric territory now instead of the, oh my God, we're all going to, you know, hit these bugs. So you combine these things, combine a lot of kind of scary stuff from 2005 with a bunch of buggy stuff from late 2006 and, connect a bunch of dots that are not even on the same piece of paper, much less part of the same picture. And you get this really confusing picture. Then put it in the hands of somebody who is a super clever writer. Okay, Peter is he's very clever and also prolific. And you put the thing together and you just have this recipe for, where there's smoke, there's fire, right? That's what most people think. Well, this can't all be FUD. This can't all be garbage. This can't all be untrue.
Well, let's go through. We can't obviously go through point by point. And you do a great job. And so, as you said, there's three parts to it, and everybody can read it in detail. But I think the thing that most concerned people was the DRM issues, and particularly the protected video path.
Right.
His contention was, unless you did it exactly right, you wouldn't be able to play back premium content. It would be downsampled. And he even said, and I think this is pretty obviously wrong, that all other output would also be downsampled.
Right. I mean, once you start talking about these things, and one of the reasons that it took me and several other people so long to actually write about this is because where do you start with that?
That's right. Well, you point out that you can play any Blu-ray DVD now. You play any HD DVD now. Somebody has said using
third-party software.
Third-party software and it's not necessarily compliant monitors and so forth. But somebody has pointed out that as of yet, these movie companies haven't turned on all the protection on these things.
Well, okay, but so let's go back to let's take this apart. Let's talk about two separate issues. Number one, much of this is the DRM is. The restrictions are set forth on the shiny disc itself.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So let's go buy an HD DVD or Blu-ray player made by Toshiba or Sony, respectively. Has nothing to do with Windows. Doesn't have any. Doesn't run Windows. Just plugs into your TV and your stereo at home, right? And you put that thing on, and then you plug it into a non-HDCP compatible monitor. Guess what? You're going to get an error message because the technical restrictions are written into the AACS specification. They're encoded on the disc and they're enforced. Any playback device, whether it's a consumer electronics player or whether it's the combination of PC software and PC hardware, has to, by license agreement with AACS, By the terms of that license agreement, it has to respect the restrictions that are encoded on that disk. Okay, so it isn't about Windows doing something horrible. It's about the playback software.
One of my concerns was that even though I don't have an HD playback or any premium content playback device on my Windows Vista PC, it still has this code in it. Is this code in any way hobbling Vista, even for business machines that will never play back premium content?
It doesn't even run unless you run a program that calls it.
So it doesn't come up at all.
Okay. Doesn't come up at all. Now, right now, Windows Media Player is one program that does call up what's called MFPMP.exe, the Media Foundation Protected Media Pipeline. Okay. And so it brings up, the reason it brings this up is because it says, look, if a third party is going to, play some restricted content, we want to be able to handle it, simultaneously with everything. So if you use Windows Media Player right now, you call up this MFPMP, but it looks at it and says, no protected content.
It goes away.
Nothing, nothing going to happen. If you use iTunes, if you use, some other non-WMP based media player program, then you'll never see this stuff. It will never run on your computer unless you run a program that calls it.
That was another thing that scared us a lot, was this notion of tilt bits, the fact that it was polling the device drivers to make sure that they were compliant and doing so every 30 milliseconds. You kind of debunk that as well.
Yeah, I mean, so right now, I have CyberLink's Power DVD Ultra installed on a test system here, and I just put in a Blu-ray disc, one of the most complicated, demanding Blu-ray discs that's encoded in MPEG-2 format, and I think it's 25 megabits per second it's pumping out there. Stuff plays back great on
and this tilt stuff is it happening all the time or only when you've loaded this pipeline?
It would only be I hate when I talk to Dave Marsh at Microsoft and he says, I wish I had never used the word tilt bit because
it's pretty inflammatory.
And it's also, it was designed, he's talking to developers and basically what he's saying is, he's saying, look, what you want to do as a developer is you want to be aware of any kind of attack that is being implemented against the video stack. If you detect that there is an attack against the video stack, reset the driver. We've all seen, those of us who've been running Vista for any length of time, we've seen the video driver reset itself.
Yeah, what does that look like?
Or another. What does it look like?
Yeah, I mean, what does it mean? That was another question. He used this word reset, and that was a little scary. What exactly happens?
Well, it resets the display. Help me out here, Paul. DWM,
desktop,
the window manager.
It just blinks. So the
desktop
window, would
window
blink.
Manager.
The screen goes black and it pops back up, basically.
In somewhere between 0.5 and 1 second, you might not even notice it. And then it comes back up. And if you were at my point is right now, with none of this stuff happening, with none of this stuff implemented or even running, you will occasionally see the desktop window manager reset itself because something happened to the driver.
Right.
A program, caused the driver to fault. And it used to be back in the XP driver model that might blue screen you. Now, because the display stack has been moved up into user mode, all it does is reset that very quickly, mm-hmm. and boom, you're back in business.
So there were a couple of concerns then. Obviously, everybody's worried that, first of all, it would be very hard to write video drivers, that this machine would be slowed down by this. And then there was, and I admit there's a political issue, too, which is, why is Microsoft, putting all this overhead in here just because Hollywood says so?
Well, wait a minute. I mean, remember, today you can, if you want, play Blu-ray and HD DVD on Windows Vista. You can't do that on the Mac, to my knowledge, because Apple has not implemented this technology.
No, I understand. Right? And the question would be, if I'm not ever going to play premium content, why should I have to put up with this stuff?
Well,
the real question is, does it really impact the performance of the system? And it sounds like it doesn't.
In my experience, it doesn't because it never runs.
Right. So that's really the fundamental thing. I understand if you're going to play back premium content, you have to play hot by Hollywood's rules. I guess my concern when Peter's article came out was we're all playing by Hollywood's rules, whether we want to or not, or whether we need to or not.
Well, but the thing is, Leo, on Windows XP right now, you can plug in an HD DVD or Blu-ray disc, and you can install a third-party player, and you can play back that content.
Well, that's only because the content hasn't yet turned on all its protections. Right?
No, that has nothing to do with it.
Well, if they demand an HDCP compliant monitor, doesn't that mean I would have to have an HDCP compliant monitor?
In fact, I have pictures of it on my blog. If you install PowerDVD Ultra on your XP machine and you plug it into a non-HDCP compatible digital monitor, you will get an error message because all of that DRM, all of that nasty DRM is in the PowerLink or the PowerDVD Ultra code. So here's the thing. Under XP right now, I can think of at least three, maybe four companies that have at great expense devised their own playback software that implements all of these things that are theoretically so evil. Okay, all of them support exactly the same things that are in Microsoft's Vista Media Foundation. But the difference is that all of those software companies, which is, CyberLink and InterVideo, right, with WinDVD, right. they have an HD compatible version right now, and at least two others that I know of, one of which is in beta. All of those had to build their entire stack security DRM management themselves and ship it to you, and then you had to install it themselves. What Microsoft has done in Vista is said, look, we're going to create a platform for this. And as a result, third parties can write software that where they don't have to invent their own DRM management software in order to comply with the stuff that is already on the disk. Okay, and so as a result, the idea should be that you'll get a choice of maybe 10 different playback options for Vista at some point in the future, instead of having all these complicated ones.
That's a benefit, but what if I'm a businessman? I don't want to play back premium content. I never will. Is there a burden that is placed on my system to support this other stuff?
No.
No, and that's the key.
Really and truly isn't. Okay, I mean, here, let me give you an example. You've got a business PC, right? And you say, I'm never going to play games on it. How come all this DirectX 10 stuff is on here? Right. Isn't it slowing down my performance?
Right.
And the answer is?
No.
Because
the only time that those DirectX 10 calls are used is if you put in a DirectX 10 compatible game.
So these tilt bits aren't running. This isn't running all the time, this whole issue of checking the driver to make sure it's not being hacked by bad guys, that kind of thing. That's not running all the time?
No.
Okay. That's only when this pipeline gets loaded.
That's only when a third-party program that calls the Media Foundation Protected Media Path executable is running and is playing what's identified as protected content.
And we've also he asserted that it would downgrade other content if protected content was there, and that's pretty apparently not the case, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I guess
we're talking about
I have out in my living room, I have a Windows Vista PC with an SPDIF SPDIF output going from an optical output on a Creative Labs card to my receiver, and then I have the video coming from my NVIDIA graphics card to my big 50-inch TV, and I have an HD DVD and Blu-ray disc plugged in there, and I put those on and I play it and everything works. Sound comes out, video comes out, There's no reason that those things should be, you know, should be shut down. Now, in the Media Foundation platform, there is the option for any content provider to turn on or off any outputs as they choose, just as there is on any disk that would be connected to a consumer electronics device. So, you know, in theory, a content provider could say, well, I don't want you playing this back through this, right, this output.
Right.
And so they have the option to turn that on, you know, at some point in the future. And, you know, so you probably wouldn't want to buy that, but that would be in the disk,
right,
not in the
right,
player, right, right, and not in the operating system.
No, I mean, you go through many, many more issues. I just think that the ones that most concerned me, and probably most concerned others, was the notion that Microsoft might have, in an effort to, you know, make nice with Hollywood, put stuff into Vista that hobbled it, slowed it down, made it less reliable. And that seems to be not the case.
That it sure seems to me not to be the case. You know, if it's one would think that after more than a year, well, nearly a year of using the RTM bits full time here on multiple machines, and well over a year of using RTM plus release candidate bits, that if there were some, you know, horrible impact on performance, that I and others would have noticed it and would have been able to point to specific instances of where this was causing problems. But every time I see somebody publicly talking about a performance or compatibility problem, and I look more carefully at it, it looks like, yep, that's a crappy driver. And yeah, you know, the driver gets updated and the problem goes away.
That's the problem.
But that doesn't preclude Microsoft from being evil though, right?
We'll still allow for that. No, but
I think, you know, Dave should have probably called them evil bits.
Evil
instead
bits.
Of
kill-
much
more,
there you go.
Much less inflammatory. And,
Maybe I'll start a new meme there.
I think that's the problem, is that because there are compatibility issues, as would be with any new operating system,
right,
people often just ascribe that. For instance, you know, every once in a while my Vista screen does some weird red line blinking, and it's just a bad driver, as we've seen before in XP and every version of Windows, and they get fixed. But then I start to go,
Microsoft,
oh my gosh.
But people are, you know, they look at that and, you know, it's they're sort of predisposed to believe that Microsoft is not just capable of doing something wrong, but is actively seeking to do something wrong.
Well, in Peter's defense, I think it's also appropriate to make sure that, you know, the operating system that's used by 90% of the world is not being in some way, you know, manipulated to appease Hollywood. So I think that that's I'm glad somebody would bring this issue up. And I'm also really thrilled to hear that it's not the case.
Yeah.
Well, it's like Michael Moore, you know, even though he's making a good point, if he has to cross the line,
well,
you know, is it still a valid argument?
Yeah.
I think the presumption of guilt or innocence seems to be shifted in a lot of the blogosphere when it comes to anything Microsoft.
Well, that's true.
Guilty until proven innocent.
Right.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and as a result, you know, things like this get out there. I mean, I got an email from somebody this morning, you know, crowing triumphantly that, you know, Microsoft is doing yet another horrible forced update of software that none of us wants. And it's,
oh, you know, I think that person emailed me as well.
Yeah. And I follow the link to the story, and it's, you know, and it's from the Inquirer, and it's like, you know, some guy on a blog is complaining that his Windows update did something, and therefore
it must be true.
Maybe.
Well,
it must be true.
This is the nature of the blogosphere, and it ain't just Microsoft that gets this kind of
treatment.
Well,
but come on, you know, there are companies like Apple and Google that always get the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, no, come on. Apple
and
got
we don't
some,
know why
Apple,
that's the case.
Apple got some whining, of which I participated when it bricked people's iPhones. I think that...
I know, but that was... Come on, that's the exception.
The rush to judgment happens online. You're right. Microsoft does often get the brunt of it. But again, I think there is a higher burden when so many computers run on your system. I mean,
no, but that also makes it more obvious that these things will be found out.
Yes,
you know,
that's
if
true.
Exactly. And to me, to get back to the DRM issue, we have had now one close to one full year. November 4th, it's like 2 weeks from now is when this right. thing RTM'd. This week, I think, is when the code was locked down. And, you know, so if there were a real smoking gun out there, we should have seen it by now, and there isn't. There's still just all this sort of wispy smoke right. off in the distance, and there's nothing here. And what I find disturbing and distressing and saddening is that there are so many people who say, I want nothing to do with Vista because it's loaded with DRM.
Right.
You know, anything, you know what? You don't want DRM, don't use it. Don't yep. install iTunes because iTunes is loaded with DRM, right?
Hey, Cory Doctorow stopped using a Macintosh because the TPM chip is on the Mac, so.
Well, you know, and if I mean, for people who want to be, you know, ideologically pure like that, you really don't want any commercial software
right.
on there because most commercial software, you know, whether it comes from Cupertino or Redmond, is going to have the capability of playing back DRM, but it's going to give you the option. Right. Of it. And you know, to me, it's about freedom of choice. And I choose not to use a lot of this stuff. But you know, that's just me. On the other hand, DVDs, standard, regular, off-the-shelf DVDs that you pick up at, you know, Netflix or Blockbuster or wherever, they're loaded with DRM.
But we know how to get around that one.
Well, no, but that's but nobody thinks like that. In other words, people think I want the
right.
DVD.
That's right.
You know, if HD DVD or Blu-ray take off, it's going to be because people choose to watch movies in high definition in that format. They're not thinking DRM. They're thinking this is the content that I want.
And if
anyone
the,
who even thinks like that.
Right. And ultimately, if it works reliably, people mm-hmm. will accept it.
Well,
it
but that's why then the copy protection guys come in and, you know, the anti-copy protection guys come in and say, well, yeah, consumers will consume, but we just want to raise our hands and say maybe this isn't the best thing, even though, you know, the market's going to say, oh, I love it, we love it. Just because everybody loves it doesn't mean it's a good thing, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, and I'm saying if it works for the average consumer who doesn't care about ideological issues, right. they really don't.
Right.
Most people don't, you know, they don't want to know the politics. They want to know, is it, if I put this thing, this shiny disc that I picked up at my local video rental place, if I come home and put it in the drawer and push play, is it going to play? And if it works, they'll be happy with it. And if it doesn't work, they'll be unhappy.
Yeah,
and,
sometimes,
you know,
maybe they need to have their consciousness erased a little bit about the long-term consequences of stuff like that. Yeah, it works now, but there are issues, other issues about it as well. And then, and believe me, consumers are starting to get...
This is almost the side issue. Because
this
really,
is a complete side issue. It's about
the
politics.
The heart of this is that, you know, Microsoft is implementing technology in its operating system that allows you to play back this content. But the story here is really the scare show that's
right.
going on
on
the side, that this stuff is... You know, running in the background is degrading the performance of your system, is degrading the playback of audio, even when you're not using protected content.
Right.
You know, that's FUD is what that is. And it's not right.
Yeah, afraid so.
Ed writes the Microsoft report for ZDNet, and that's where you can read this entire piece. We'll put a link to it. And also, by the way, a lot of good stuff. In fact, Ed, we were talking about your RIAA survey on Twit this week, and maybe we should get you on Twit to talk about that as well, because that was very, very interesting.
Love to, and I'm still working on part three, which is the most complicated part of it. But yeah, it was a real eye opener.
No kidding.
I mean, you know, 96% of people say, "Hey, don't take away my right to copy my own CDs." I mean, that's just I don't think you can get more emphatic than that.
Yeah.
Sure.
But that's the politics, and we'll talk about that on Twit. So thank you so much for joining us. You can also read Ed's blog at edbot.com. And there's a lot of good stuff on there as well. And look for his book, Windows Vista Inside and Out. That is in bookstores everywhere right now or on amazon.com. And almost as good as Paul's book. Oh, I shouldn't have said that.
They're wow. side by side.
Let
the reader pick them up
on paper.
You need both of them.
They're both about the same topic. That's
Amazon.com will give you a discount if you buy them both together.
I think it will, actually, yes.
That is actually true. Thanks a lot, Leo. Thanks a lot, Paul.
Oh, it's really good to talk to you again, Ed. Yeah, and thanks for a really great column. I'm glad it took 8 months, but I'm glad you got it out.
Talk to you guys later.
Take care.
Bye.
That is Ed Bott. It's so nice. I'm just thrilled to talk to him again. I haven't, as he said, I haven't talked to him in about 10 years. And he has cut off the ponytail, but he's the same in every other respect.
I'm just jealous that he lives in New Mexico. I wish I lived in Mexico.
Well, you can live anywhere.
I know. Well, I'm not single, so I can't actually live anywhere.
So your wife works in Dedham, and that's why you're stuck there?
Yeah, when we first got married, 17 and a half years ago, we actually went on our honeymoon to the Southwest states, and I was hoping... Yeah, well, I had spent a lot of time in Albuquerque growing up, and I was really hoping that she would like New Mexico, and she really wasn't that interested. So that was the end of that. But I go back there once in a while. Just
maybe someday you can retire. You're from that area, right? You're from Arizona?
Well, I'm from Boston area, but lived in Albuquerque for a couple of years. And then Stephanie and I did, in fact, move to Phoenix, Arizona for several years. That was the one place. You know, we went to Colorado and Utah. In Arizona, and Phoenix was the one place out there that she said, okay, I could do this.
I could live with that.
Yeah, so we tried that out for several years, but now we're back.
Well, we're glad you're back, and we're glad you do Windows Weekly every week. We're going to take next week off. I'm off to Vancouver. We'll dig up much more Windows news and have it for you when I return. Thank you very much, Paul Theron.
Thank you, sir.
And don't forget Paul's blog, internet-nexus.com, and of course, he's the... news editor for Windows IT Pro, and you can read everything you'd ever want to know about Windows and his review of Leopard coming out later today at the Supersite for Windows. That's winsupersite.com. And if you're, a dyed-in-the-wool Windows user, you just avert your eyes when you see the Leopard article. Just move on.
I think you should read it.
Actually, yeah. It could be like all the reasons why you should be glad you stayed with Vista.
No, it's not. It's not a hatchet job. It's.
I'm excited. I'm actually. We're recording this a day early because I'm going down to Cupertino in a few minutes to get my copy of Leopard. And
speaking of mind control,
you're
gonna come back. You're gonna call me on the way back and say you're wrong, Theron.
It's great.
Apple's
it's
the great. Future.
I love it. No, I think I'm pretty hard headed. I go in there. In fact, I was gonna bring my Dell, and then I thought, I'd be doing that. Just to do that. That's dumb. I'm not going to do that. But I am bringing my BlackBerry, not my iPhone. Hey, we'll talk again in a couple of weeks. Thank you so much, Paul Theron. Thank you for joining us. We see you next time on Windows Weekly.